This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hi, I'm Dino Tripodis. Tonight on Whiskey Business, two twin girls are born in a small town in Ohio on Easter. What could possibly go wrong? Tonight, author Hope Madden and her creepy book, Roost, on Whiskey Business. Dino Tripodis, and welcome to Whiskey Business, the podcast not so much about whiskey as it is one with whiskey. Why do we say that? Yes, we have a different bottle of whiskey on the podcast each and every week. We're up to 100, and we're getting close to 200 bottles.
Yeah, we got to start making a game plan for our 200th.
For our 200th bottle. But, you know, it's because we go literally from A to Z. The big thing here on Whiskey Business is a good pour and a good conversation with guests that range from A to Z. This particular guest would be into the W's, writer, or the B's, books.
Book writer.
A, author. Uh-huh. You know, and then you can go into the genre of the book. Suspense, S, H, horror, or H, Hope Madden is our guest tonight. I know. And the book is Roost. We teased it a little bit. If Hope looks familiar to you, she accompanies George Wolfe every year for our annual Oscar podcast, because they are movie critics extraordinaire, and you guys did very well with your Oscar picks.
We had a good ballot this year.
A good ballot this year. Ultimately, as far as the podcast goes, you beat out George. I know that George changed some of his picks after the podcast, but on Whiskey Business, he's in the living room listening. He can hear everything I'm saying. On Whiskey Business, he was wrong.
Yeah, he had West Side Story, I think.
And Hope was right. Yeah. Before that, but we teased this. We held this up during the podcast and said we would come back to it. And here we are with the book Roost, which is now available everywhere. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yep.
You've had some book signings. You've had some nice publicity about it. You've had some great reviews about it. Utterly original. Bubbling over with unease, featuring a shocking twist that breathes new life into a popular horror trope. This novel is quite simply breathtaking. That came from Becky Spratford of the Library Journal, which ain't no slouch as far as reviews in literary circles. You had to be thrilled when you got that.
I about cried. I was so happy with that.
Right?
Yes.
It's a good start, if you will. Let's talk about, there's so many things I want to ask. We'll talk, there's only so many questions I can ask about the book, because if I dig in too deep, I get into spoiler alert.
And you read the whole thing.
Oh, yeah.
I read the first book. They're not in chapters, they're in books. So I read the first two books.
Yeah. Yes.
So I could be. I told my mom. I said, "Hey, I read two books last night."
It in itself is huge, because the boy doesn't read much. it's a huge testament.
The fact there weren't any pictures or anything. Damn it.
But the book itself is set in a small town in Ohio, the town that you grew up in.
I the last thing I did before I sent it to the publisher was to control alt and replace my hometown with a fictional hometown. Mm-hmm. So yes, it's based in my hometown, but I don't use the name of my hometown in it.
Yeah. But anybody that reads this book and anybody that knows you will go, oh, that's her hometown.
Yes. But I also kind of think it probably looks like a lot of small I mean, certainly rural Ohio hometowns during that time period, but I think most probably rural American hometowns during that time period.
I grew up in Steubenville. There were things and descriptions in this book in some of the more rural parts of Steubenville that could have applied, and some of the people as well that could have
applied. That was my follow-up. The people, did you change the names of the people, or do you really have...
Not two of them. Two of them had to keep their same names.
Your names.
That'd be Hope and Joy.
That's right.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not a spoiler.
Yeah.
There.
And the book is about two twin sisters who are born on Easter Sunday. And you have a twin. I didn't know you had a twin.
I do.
Until you came on the on Sunday 95 to talk about the book. Mm-hmm. I did not know you were a twin.
Yep.
Are you an identical twin?
We are not. Joy is like 5'3.5", 5'4". And yeah. And
you are not.
No, I'm 5'11".
Yeah.
And yeah, and I mean, there was always that big of a, like, I mean, I'm 8 inches taller than she is. And so, my parents still dressed us like when we were kids, which just seemed weird. People would be like, why is that girl dressed like her babysitter? I don't understand. It was very unusual. But we are twins.
Uh-huh. So that part of the book is, you know, truthful. Any stranger that reads the book, you get to read it without any knowledge or having known Hope Madden for the last few years. I'm reading it going,
that's 100%.
I wonder if that's true.
What percent of this creepy shit is true?
I wonder if that's true. I wonder if that happened.
No kidding. That's the whole thing I was thinking too.
I wonder if that person really exists. Well, that's kind of fucked up. Did that occur? And like I said, only so many things I can say without offering spoiler alerts. And also, excuse my grammar ignorance, because I asked you this one time before, and I can't remember. It's not written in the first person. It's not written in the third person.
No.
It's written...
It's omniscient. It's a third-person perspective. So it's omniscient. The voice and the knows everything. But they're really, the storytelling is limited to one person's point of view. So it's not Hope's perspective.
Right.
It's an omniscient, but we never see anything she doesn't see, except for like there are three times. And that's kind of when you realize the voice knows everything, but they're only telling you what Hope sees.
From her perspective.
Okay, from her perspective. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because when I was reading, because I know you write screenplays as well. And as I was reading it, so I was like, well, some of this sometimes reads like the descriptions of the action of a screenplay before the actual scene you know, starts to begin. And I kind of dug that because I like, okay, well, now I can see this as now I'm looking at it as a movie.
You're already making the movie in your head, aren't you?
I'm seeing where the movie goes. And you know what? Actually, as I was reading it, I was picturing like who would play the sheriff, right? who would play Victor, who would play the brothers, and there's some nasty people in this book.
There are.
Did you grow up with nasty people?
You know, not murderers, as far as you
that
know.
You know.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, I think what I tried to recall is the way you feel at that specific age. And I think, you know, there's a sense that so many people are menacing when you're an innocent person, right? When you're an innocent, I think the sort of menacing, creepy people come out of the woodwork if you aren't surrounded by, you know, people who love you. And I think that was the feeling I was trying to generate.
Yeah, you generated it for sure. Hansberry, a little whiskey business before
business.
Continue.
You can find all of the whiskey business at whiskeybusinesspod.com, including the aforementioned Hope and George Oscar podcast.
Big word.
Aforementioned. I've been reading.
Wow. Aforementioned. Nice.
I'm going to be done for big words for the rest of the day. that word big. But anyway, all our archived episodes are there, including some of Dino's. You have some random writings and some
film
shorts.
Yeah, I need to do more, though.
So,
see, after reading the book and, like, God damn it.
Inspired you to get cooking?
She sat down. She wrote a book. She finished the book. She published the book. I need to get my ass on the typewriter and crank out some stuff.
Well, that's your first mistake. They have laptops out there.
Yeah.
They go quicker.
All right. That's another discussion. That's in my notes for later for Hope.
All right. So check that out. Whiskey Business is also on YouTube, Whiskey Business with Dino Tripodis, where you can watch all the unedited videos and some of the silly shorts and stuff that you guys have done.
Thanks to our friend on the other side, John Whitney, on the video side of things.
Just smash that subscribe button right there and click the bell, and then you'll get a notification every time a new episode comes up.
And you also want to thank the Evergreen Podcast Network for being our home base network, where you can they are the ones who spread the joy of Whiskey Business. That's to right. All your various platforms.
Yep, evergreenpodcast.com. And they've got kid podcasts. My son's been listening to some of the kid podcasts on there.
That's cool. Yeah, they got something for everybody. Everybody.
Including?
Including you. Us. Our guest bottle tonight, two guest bottles. One, the Jim Beam Rye Pre-Prohibition Style.
What does that mean?
It's exactly what it says. Before Prohibition.
Well, I know, but like, does it have a certain flavor profile or made a certain way?
Yeah, well, it does. Well, you tell me, because
it's
I've never had this before.
It's really hot.
It's very peppery. It's very peppery. It's got a little hint of caramel in it, as far as I'm concerned.
I'd give you a splash up. You can always have more.
I actually like it.
You do?
I do. So it must be fairly unsophisticated, is my guess.
No, not necessarily. I mean...
It is. It's kind of this spicy. I like that.
It is spicy. It's very spicy. It's a. This kind of reminds me of almost a slightly spicier. Oh, what can I compare it to as far as ryes that are in this price range? Because this bottle is only like $24 a bottle. So it definitely is in our favorite area of, you know, $50 and under for a bottle.
When it says the spirits is the perfect choice for any whiskey cocktail.
You can put so this there, in there. You can make if you like your Manhattans with the rye.
Yeah, I can see this being a low shelf Manhattan.
Yeah. This is good. This is not bad at all. Old Overhaul for about the same price. You can get this. And this is kind of a spicier Old Overhaul, which is probably one of my favorite ryes. But this is good. I saw it. I picked it up. We never had it on the show before. We tried
I'm
it. We do have a different bottle every week. It's getting harder and harder. We're up to like almost 200 bottles of different bottles of whiskey. That's nuts, right?
It is.
Yeah. Mm. Oh, well, there's no problems. It's just, we could repeat whiskeys and nobody would be the wiser.
No, but why would we? I mean, I take it as a personal challenge. And you said something at the beginning of the year that we haven't done yet, but dipping our toes in the Japanese whiskey.
The Japanese whiskey. My my daughter's boyfriend brought me a bottle of Japanese whiskey for Christmas. And I'm looking for the right guest and the right occasion to open that whiskey. It just seems like it should be thematic on some level. I don't know.
I want to taste it, so I'll help you brainstorm.
Also, I want to remind people to watch the podcast that is currently running as we speak. It's called The Class of 1977. Were Those the Days? One of my best and longest friends of all time, Greg DeTore, is on that podcast as we reminisce our graduating year of high school and into college. 45 years, I'll be out of high school. We're having a reunion in October. At least that's the talk anyway. 45th class reunion. I didn't think I'd be alive, let alone.
Make it to October.
there's still a chance. There's still a chance I might not make it. God, knock wood. But yeah, I'm telling you, people, if you reminisce about better days, your high school years, your younger days, this would be the podcast for you to listen to. And just, we laughed, Hope. We laughed nonstop for like 90 plus minutes.
Nice.
It was just, yeah.
It sounds fun.
Yeah. Did you enjoy high school?
It sound like I enjoyed high school?
I don't know. I don't know. See, now that's what I'm saying. It was just supposed to be fiction.
No, I'm just kidding. I did. I had a fine time in high school. We didn't have, high school itself was not my problem in high school.
High school itself was not my problem.
My mom died when I was in high school.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So it was kind of a gloomy time period in my life, but I can't blame school for that.
No. No.
Nuns. So, yep.
And how many children in your family?
Six.
Six?
Yep.
And were you and your sister the oldest?
The youngest.
The youngest. You're the youngest. Mm-hmm. So everybody ahead of you. Mm-hmm. So how old were you? What year of high school were you when that happened?
It was the beginning of my senior year.
Okay.
And yeah, we were the only two still at home.
Wow. Can I ask what she passed away of? Is that too hard of a question?
It's called amyloidosis. So it's a rare, it's kind of related in a way to, she had lupus it's kind of related in a way to that.
So the mother that is ill in this book, is that drawn from experiences?
Very much, very much. And the other two sisters are very much patterned after my two older sisters as well. Yeah.
Well, the old adage is write what you know.
They really are fictional characters, I swear to you. But not inside the Murphy household. They are very much drawn from my own family for sure.
Okay. And when you decided to write a book, because you do write, you've made your living writing. Mm-hmm. You write articles, reviews, other things as well. Poetry?
I do, yeah. It's a short story, screenplays, obviously.
Right. So, mm-hmm. Yeah. The screenplay that you're currently getting ready to shoot. Have you started shooting it?
No, we start May 1st.
May 1st. Yeah. God bless. I know. That is an ambitious project. Obstacle corpse.
No rain.
Yeah.
Yeah. Isn't it all outside a lot of it?
Yeah. All of it.
Yeah.
All
of it. Good luck shooting in. Good luck shooting in April and May when you think it's going to be great out. Right, John Whitney? Yeah. We hope you have better luck with the weather than we did. Well, it's kind of. So when you sat down to write a book, did the process change as far as how you write? What is your process for sitting down and writing? It's different for every writer. Some people say you have to sit down and write every day and write something every day. I don't care what it is. I've read books about writing, on writing. Sit down, put your butt in a chair, and write every day, even if it's just a paragraph or a page, even if it's nonsense, just to keep the wheels greased and turning. So what was the process when writing Roost?
I've never had like a writer's block issue, and I think that's because that is all I do. I mean, I just write different things. Not all of it is very challenging or interesting, but that's all I do is write stuff. And what I wanted to do was kind of harness some of the odd stories from growing up in a way that for a long time I wrote a column for Columbus Monthly Magazine called Finale. I wasn't the only one, but I was one of the people who wrote this. And it was really just 800 words about something funny that happened in Columbus. That was what it was. It's a good template for me, you know, like to tell a funny story in 800 words, funny true story. And so I thought, well, I can't write those about like my childhood, but I have got much better stories about that than about, you know, being in line at Chipotle or whatever, which I did in fact write a story about.
It's okay.
So I just sort of
800 words worth of Chipotle.
That's right.
Yeah.
I just sort of started keeping track of stories and the ones that I thought were to me funny, but at the same time, you know, kind of creepy. Like that time I passed out at church. It's kind of creepy in a weird way. Like, whoa, that's what I kind of looked at, the ones that I could spin in a way and collect into this, where we look at a slice of life from three different time periods in a coming of age kind of a tale. So that was how it started, was just me sort of running over true stories. And after that, collecting them into little buckets and then developing a plot around it.
Sometimes when I write, I don't know, especially with a short story or anything, sometimes I don't know where it's going or how it's going to end. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I surprise myself. Mm-hmm. Did you have, before you started to write word one, did you have a definite idea of how this book was going to finish and end?
No. And I wrote that ending. I bet I wrote six different endings. And what I wanted to do was just try them all out. Like, you know, I knew the trajectory and I knew who the players were at the end. And so I just went in my head, okay, well, what if it goes in this direction? Mm-hmm. And then I just tried in all the directions I could think of until I found the one I liked the best. And then I honestly kind of rewrote the entire story to lead more organically to that end.
Gotcha. And since some of these characters are based on family members, how have family members responded to seeing some of the things in print?
They don't know who they actually wrote it.
And I will back you up. I will back you up with no matter what your answer is, because I have something that's relatable, but I want to hear your answer first.
They knew it was coming. So, and my twin sister read probably every draft of it. She reads most everything that I write. And she was, you know, she did not want her name to be the final name. So that was an argument. And I'm like, but Open Joy on Easter. I mean, that's kind of perfect.
Yeah, it is.
So, but she made me change our last name because I hadn't at first. So yeah, I know. It's a big leap, right, from Madden to Murphy. My other two sisters have, you know, my oldest sister read it. She read it in one sitting. She's incredibly, as you might know, she's incredibly supportive and loving and nurturing. And she felt like maybe she came off as slightly superficial and gullible. And I'm like, well, you're a side character, Julianne. They have to be superficial.
They gotta fit the mold, right?
But she liked it. Somebody really cool plays you in the movie.
That's right. But she liked it a lot. My other sister does not like spooky stuff. At all. And so she's still talking herself into reading it. So she hasn't read it yet. She's afraid it will scare her.
Interesting. Yeah. So some people okay with it and some have their issues. The reason I asked, because I did this four-piece memoir series for this magazine and told some hard truths about growing up in Greece. You know, at the it's called A Boy Without a Country. And I didn't tell my family about it because I knew if I told them, first of all, they would say, don't write it.
Right.
You know, don't tell our business. We're really telling your business. Right. I'm telling you my business. Mm-hmm. What a 9-year-old was experiencing moving from a suburb in Chicago to an island in Greece in 1969. And yes, but my mother, she was not initially pleased at all. Even though I said nothing defaming in respects to her, if anything, she comes out this champion, this hero, this strong, strong woman in the early 70s and late 70s who, you know, a single mom back in that particular point in time had a rough way to go.
Yeah.
You know, even though that was what she drew out of it, right. You know, yay, mom.
Wasn't that always the conundrum of the artist? Like, you can have every intention in the world, whether it's a song or a book or a painting, and then as soon as you put it out there, it's up to the consumer to really.
But when the consumer or the reader is your family, and they're like, I don't know that that happened. And I had my mother on this podcast, and I asked her some hard questions then, and my sister was here in the background, and my mom's answering the questions as she remembers to be the truth, and my sister's in the back going. No.
I do think it's different for nonfiction. I think for absolutely it's different for nonfiction, you know, because they don't have the ability to sort of separate themselves at all from the story. But, you know, David Sedaris is one of my favorite writers. And, you know, he gets away with it. You know, it's like you have to, I think, separate yourself from what the reaction will be and just tell. Writing is hard.
Yes.
You know, I mean, you don't need to add anybody else's censorship to what you're trying to do, because to fight your own tendency towards self-censorship, I think, is one of my biggest battles.
It's one of mine as well. In fact, in one of the pieces, there was a very traumatic piece that I did leave out because it was already, the piece that I'd written was already traumatic enough. Mm-hmm. And if I would have put this piece in, then I think the pot would have just flown off the lid as far as grief.
Yeah.
And you know what's funny is after they read, I don't think they've read all four excerpts either. I think
your family?
Yeah. Uh-huh. I think they read one and said, I'm done with him. And you know what? I'm not gonna read anymore because it's gonna upset me, even though it won't. But whatever the case might be. But it's interesting. I was curious what your family thought as they see somebody like, because if it's positive, it's like, well,
that's right.
You see what? Okay.
Yeah.
And if it's even remotely negative, it's like, what the?
Right.
Is that what you think of me?
Right. It's funny. I think the person who had the most sort of the biggest reaction to it is my oldest brother, who's in fact not in it. I didn't represent my two older brothers in the story because it's just too damn many characters. He's 18 years older than we are. So I think he lived in Oregon by the time I was in high school. I know he did. But he was the first person I know to have read it all the way through. He got his copy. I told you this the last time I saw him, before I did. And it's not very long. He read it very quickly. And his response was like, damn it, little girl. Like he didn't dislike it. He thought it was well written, but he didn't like it either.
From someone from that perspective, does he look back and have like, oh shit, I wish I was would have done XYZ? Do you know what I mean? Is there any of that? Any like resentment or regret?
No, I think he just, he loved the characters more than the average reader would love the characters.
Sure.
And so when bad things happen to people you love,
right,
you didn't expect to read that and you're sad.
Is this your first book?
Yes, it is.
First book. And now after writing this first book, has that, do you got the taste for it now? Do you want to write more books?
I do. Yeah, I definitely
and
do.
Will they be in this genre? I'm trying to think about how Stephen King felt when he finally published Carrie.
Right.
His first book. You know, he probably sat back and went, okay, I always said I wanted to write a book, and there it is. I did it, and, you know, and Carrie, creepy as
oh,
well.
Yeah, I
mean, coming from a whole different, you know, you don't think that the things that are going to happen
right.
will happen in that book, and it's kind of...
Yeah, it's coming of age. It's coming of age horror. And
Yeah. So when, you know, and then he goes on to become this prolific... And I say it in a positive, this prolific monster of an author.
Oh, sure.
Who I probably love 75 to 80% of the stuff that Stephen King. Some of the stuff I'm like, you know, the fantasy stuff lost me. I'm not a big fantasy guy.
Yeah, I'm not either.
Dark Tower type
stuff. I couldn't get into that. But I'm curious, would you stay in this genre? The reason I ask is because I know you love horror, and that's going to be another question here in respects to some of the references in the book. I know you love horror, but you have this really, really great sense of humor as well.
Thank you.
So I'm curious if you were to write another book, does it necessarily have to stay in this genre? Are you comfortable, or would you bust out of your sides a little bit and try something different?
It would be a very big leap for me. It's just the way I think, which is probably not something I should admit out loud, right? It just is. It's the way I see things. Like, I find the horror in everything. It's easy for me to come up with some scary story about almost anything that I see or do.
Why is that?
I have no idea.
Why
is
that?
I grew up in Tiffin, Ohio.
Because you grew up, do you think it's where you grew up and how you grew up? How does someone get this way?
Here's the truth of it. So when I was a little kid, I was afraid of everything. I mean, I was terrified by absolutely everything, by like Superhost, right? From like the TV show sort of, right? I was afraid of everything. And one of the things that very small children do, like it, where little kids always want to read the same book again and again and again and again. It's because they know it by heart, and it gives them a sense of control over an uncontrollable world. I started watching scary movies. And I did it to the point where I can predict what's going to happen 99% of the time, all the time. And I think when I was a kid, that gave me a sense of control over what was scary. The other thing, of course, it did was poison my mind completely
right.
to everything that I was not already afraid of. It's like, you know, I started off afraid of this small number of things. And now I have a pathological terror of the woods. I'm afraid of birds. The South, thanks to Stephen King, the Northeast. I mean, I'm just the list of stuff I'm afraid of.
See, I would think
very long.
That as much as you embrace horror, the genre, I would think that it would be just the opposite, that nothing would scare you.
Movies don't.
Movies
not
don't.
Ever.
But real life does.
Yes.
That's what
so
we,
you find the true
like
horrors
it,
in real life
right.
as opposed
yeah.
to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So, God. Well, Any person that makes a horror movie and you have to review it, they're probably thinking, oh, fuck. Shit, nothing scares her. And yet, I know that you've been actually impressed with certain horror films.
Oh, I love horror movies. I mean, I'm a massive fan. Like, I really celebrate horror movies. And there is one, the one that scared me to death was the original Blair Witch Project. Because I'm afraid of the woods.
Right.
And the whole movie was like, that's totally what would happen to me. Like, that's why I don't go in right there.
Freak out.
That's why.
Wow. Okay. So again, well, like I said, I think you have a great sense of humor.
Thank you.
So why can't there be the combination of
I think there always there are a lot
horror,
is anyway.
You know?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah. I mean, I could definitely see doing that.
Because Obstacle Corpse,
mm-hmm.
coming back to you, to mm-hmm. the screenplay, mm-hmm. has got humor in it.
Oh yeah, it's a comedy. Yeah, I mean, we're sort of, we're gonna, our kind of theme for it is a cross between Battle Royale and Caddyshack. Like, uh-huh. we're absolutely going for comedy.
Is that the elevator pitch?
Uh-huh. It is.
Is that the elevator pitch? I want to see that. I don't even have to get to the top floor to sign off on that one. It's like, if you're only going up three floors, it's a combination of Battle Royale and Caddyshack. All right.
Is there a talking gopher?
You get us Bill Murray, we'll sign in. We're good to go. Interesting. And also, once again, like I said, you write what you know. And one thing that seemed to show itself throughout the book was a lot of pop culture references in respects to, you mentioned you watched a lot of horror films growing up as a kid. There's a lot of mention of horror films. And I'm thinking, are these the ones that stuck out to her when she was growing up? Prince of Darkness, When a Stranger Calls, the Motel Hell was in the mix, and also some television.
Oh, well, and I stood out to me was the Cars record. Flipping through the records, I'm a record collector. So I go, oh, Cars, all right, I can place that.
there was references to music and movies. Yeah. So was that comforting to you to put those in there, or were you using them to help other people identify with the time period and whatnot?
It was both. I definitely wanted there to be a very clear time stamp, you know? And so, the specific, you know, because there were certain like albums or videos or even movies that I wanted to refer to because I felt thematically they made more sense, but they didn't come out in the year that I was talking about. Mm. They didn't come out yet. Right. So I could have talked about them if they were 2 years old, but not if they weren't out yet. So I was very careful about that. And because I hoped to use that to ground the four different books in their appropriate time period.
The internet would have called her out.
No, for sure.
Well, you know, I can't remember what movie it was. Maybe it was some cop buddy film. And I remember getting pissed off because it was set in the 70s and some of the music that they were using and the year that they were supposedly in. Some of those songs hadn't come out till like 2 years later. And I went, no. And I mean, granted, nobody else would probably pick up on that. But being in radio, I'm like, that song came out 2 years after this supposedly year happened. But there was also television references, which cracked me up. And some of them, I'm like, okay, how does... There was Little House on the Prairie.
Yeah.
There was Thundercats was in there. There was Charles in Charge. Yeah. And Charles in Charge a lot. So were these the TV shows that stuck in your craw and you loved? You made a reference to Simon and Simon, but also a diss as well.
Yeah.
Because you say that the guy that was in Simon and Simon was a horrible actor in Prince of Darkness.
Correct. That's accurate. All that is accurate. My dad watched a lot of Simon and Simon. My mom loved Michael Landon. And
Little House on the Prairie.
I hated that show. I hated it so much. But we watched a lot of Little House on the Prairie when I was very small. And then the other shows were shows that I did watch with the two boys that I babysat for. So Thundercats was all. I mean, we were massive Thundercats fans. All of us were. Oh yeah, all the time. And they wanted, you know. And then we would play Thundercats while we weren't watching the Thundercats. And I was always lying. Oh, I didn't care what the little boys wanted. And I'm like, complain one more time, Timothy, and your snarf. That's all I'm saying right now. So,
but no, you're right. That's brilliant because you do it. Look, it timestamps it. Everybody can relate to where you were in that point in time.
Yep. So I'm going, come on, let there be a BJ and the Bear reference in here somewhere. BJ and the Bear. BJ and the Bear. Greg Evigan and a chimpanzee. You don't know what BJ and the Bear is?
No.
Oh man, that was some. That was actually, if NBC had a Nazi TV, that would a couple of seasons, that would have been in the mix. It was a trucker who had a chimpanzee as his
I know that show. I had a massive crush on Greg Evigan when I was little, and George and I talked about this not too long ago, whether BJ and the Bear was a spinoff of Sheriff Lobo or vice versa. But it was that time period where all shows were spinoffs of some other
something,
show.
I think Lobo was a spinoff of BJ and the Bear. And I think.
My dad liked that show too.
And then of course he, you know, Greg Evigan with My Two Dads. Da, da, da. Riser.
Oh yeah.
What
I thought you were going to do a spoiler. So I was going, no.
Trust me, dude.
What's going to happen at the end of BJ and the Bear?
I don't know. But then there was like other pop culture references where you actually refute referred to some of the minutia of a particular episode. There was like a Charlie's Angels episode in the book where they're hypnotized to believe that there's something else. I'm going, damn, these are shows and moments in pop culture that obviously have affected her. That if they're still stuck in your subconscious and show up in a book.
I feel like,
though, and I'm not saying that in a bad way. Yeah. I found it to be in a very entertaining way. Like, and I was reading going, I remember that episode.
I just feel like that's the way, you know, kids talk to each other. That's what you talk about. You know, when I was a kid, we talked about the TV shows that we had just watched. And then when I was in high school, of course, all we did was bitch about music and what everybody else was listening to and what we had to hear.
Right.
So in that last book, there's a great deal about hair metal and
right.
the one character's disdain for it.
Right. I might be getting the bands mixed up, but I don't believe there are fond things said about Motley Crue.
No, there are not.
Yeah.
There
yeah.
are not.
And do you still feel that way today?
I had a Twitter conversation with somebody today who quoted the line I have about Motley Crue back to me. And he thought, he was like, thumbs up, except Poison. And I thought, no, you're right. It's definitely Poison. Poison is definitely worse than Motley Crue. So, yeah.
Oh, man.
No, I'm not a fan.
Girls,
I'm
girls,
not a fan.
Girls.
So,
it's a different horror genre right there.
So how long did it take to write this?
You know, it's not like I...
You're going to piss me off when you say it, no matter what you say.
Oh, it's gonna, 3 days.
Yeah, you're going to piss me off. You're going to piss me off.
It, you know, it took a long time because...
It did? Okay, maybe I won't be pissed off.
Yeah, the way I usually work on anything is I work on something for a long time, get a full draft of it, and completely ignore it for like 6 months. Don't ever give it a second thought. And while that 6 months happens, I work on something else completely. So I usually have... Not right now because I'm pre-pro on a movie. But other than that, I usually have three kind of simultaneously working in different... sort of drafts, right? So so it would be, it took me, I would say, at least 4 years to write it. Yeah.
We got, okay, just for the people
how
listening,
many?
There's
four.
Three cameras.
Four.
Yeah.
I thought you said 40. 40.
How old do you think I am?
Yeah, I was say, like, what?
Well, technically, it's probably right. She's, you know, writing it since she's been seven.
4 years to write it. Mm-hmm. So the idea was always in your head to write it, or... I mean, what actually spurred you on to actually sit down and say, it's time to write this book?
At lunch at Chipotle, I was recounting one of the stories that's in the book, just some idiotic thing that happened to me in high school, probably the When a Stranger Calls story, actually. And my friend Krisha, she said, you should write all these down. This would make a funny story. And I thought, I should write all these down. This would make a funny story. And then it turns out my childhood is a horror story. But we first thought it was going to be a comedy.
Yeah.
Fine line.
And one of the things that you mentioned in the Oscar podcast, mm-hmm. when we were teasing the book a little bit, was the issues that you have in film, especially, mm-hmm. and maybe in books as well, on how they get Catholicism wrong. Now, in respects to this book... In respects to Catholicism, because uh-huh. it raises its head,
it does,
you know,
yeah.
and shows itself. Were you trying to get it right in or because it doesn't how should I say this? It doesn't make or break the book, but the description of some of the nuns and so forth and. The church itself,
even anchored in the Holy Week,
yeah, and anchored in and some of the closed minds of the locals in respects to it. So, in respects to Catholicism mm-hmm. and religion, do you think that you covered your base adequately, or could you have gone deeper and darker?
I definitely think there's certainly a horror story to be told that's rooted entirely in Catholicism, and that's not what this is. It's just a Catholic family, and so the Catholic and see, it's very much about Satanic Panic, about the actual time period. That's really what it's about.
Satanic Panic.
Was that going on in
the
Tippin?
Satanic, yes.
Satanic Tiffin? Panic. Tiffin? I've never heard it referred to as that.
So yeah, it's like the time period. It's through the 80s and into the 90s where, you know, Geraldo Rivera had people on and they blamed everything on Satan, and it was,
right.
yeah. But it wasn't just Catholic. It definitely wasn't. Yeah. And so I wanted that to be the sheriff. So the sheriff is not Catholic. He actually kind of seems very, he seems to find it problematic that he's in the Catholic Church the one day that he is. Because I also think that's fairly authentic.
Uh-huh.
The idea that there's also something quite almost pagan about Catholicism if you're from some a different.
But the sheriff in the book is also seems to be religious.
Very.
And was on Geraldo.
Yeah. You know, he seems to be very religious.
Just not Catholic. And, I didn't want it to be exclusively Catholic. Right. Although I don't dig in because I would be ignorant of a religion outside of Catholicism. I went to Catholic school for 12 years. My dad worked for the Catholic Church. It's very...
Are you a good Catholic?
No.
You're not a good Catholic.
No, and but as we I'm speak familiar today, with it. Very.
You're a familiar Catholic. So do you practice Catholicism as we speak?
I mean, we...
As we get, because we are recording.
Are you going to church on Sunday?
Yeah, we're recording this podcast on Holy Week.
Will I see you at Mass?
Coincidentally enough. Ew, that's just kind of creepy now that I thought about
it.
The sisters are born, on Easter Sunday.
Right.
And now we're doing a podcast on the Holy Week.
Yeah, it's perfect.
On Holy Tuesday. I don't even know.
I don't think Tuesday has a name.
No. Sure it does.
Does it?
I don't know. In the Greek church, there's Holy Monday, Holy Tuesday. The Greeks are doing something every day of the week during Holy Week. I don't know what.
No.
Much like you might not be a good Catholic anymore, I'm a bad Greek Orthodox.
Well, yeah. A shameless plug for our Halloween episode, and I don't know if you heard it, but Father Nick, one of our buddies in town here, came on and he kind of talked. He dove in from the Catholic, he was a Catholic priest, about the perspective of Catholicism and exorcisms and demons and... You kind of said the thing about pagan, use that word, but you're right. Like the Catholics are weird and creepy. I mean, there's like a whole creepy thing right there already. Mm-hmm. My point is that this, after listening to that, we did that podcast with him. It really kind of was A, cool, and B, you're right. Even this religion that's supposed to be the saving grace is scary as fuck.
Yeah,
it's weird.
So do you, some of the things that have been rooted deep into you, do you still believe today, or do you question? Because I'm curious, as you write a book like this, yeah. I mean, where's the balance?
Yeah, you know. Where I grew up, I mean, it would be impossible, I think, for me to write a story that is based on my family without that family being Irish Catholic. I would not have the vaguest idea of how to do it. That's right. Just so DNA deep for that group of people living there, and how our week was really structured around Mass on Sunday. I mean, like when we went on vacation, my dad might not be able to find a public restroom, but by God, we found a Catholic church.
You found
Sunday.
A church to go to.
Yes, never missed Mass.
And why is it that I wonder why if it skips generations? I know families like that where the mother and the father were devout Catholics, and everybody went to church on Sunday, and their children, their flock. Seems to separate from the pack.
Can I answer?
So, hey, Whiskey Business people, it's only happened a couple of times on this podcast where there's been a technical glitch. It's not escaped me that the technical glitches that happened before were on a Halloween podcast. Creepy. And I think one other time when Father Nick Ventura was on.
That episode we were talking about earlier in this podcast.
And while we were talking a moment ago about Catholicism and evil, all of a sudden Hansberry tells me there was yet another glitch in the podcast. While we're talking with Hope Madden, who has written a creepy good book called Roost about terrible things that happen on Easter Sundays.
That's right.
All right, so let me tell them what's going to happen. Right now we're taking like a...
What's going to happen? Technically what's going to happen. I'm like...
let me cover the text stuff.
I almost got struck by lightning today, too, now that I think about it.
You did?
I know,
He's not kidding. Did happen.
All right, tell them what's going to happen.
All right, okay. So we're taking a weird break right here. But so the next about 3 or 4 minutes, you're going to hear the camera from John's GoPros.
Right.
So it's going to sound kind of... Not as great as I produced it.
Not as professional.
but anyway, it saved my ass. So, because it's the backup. So we're going to play that for a couple minutes, and then we'll just jump back in after that.
And my favorite part of this explanation is when we ask Whitney, like, can we use your camera audio? And a whole lot of muss and fuss and technical.
Right.
And Whitney was like, yeah, sure, whatever.
He's used to me giving him shitty audio, so he doesn't care.
Yeah, sure, whatever. But it was freaky that we were talking about evil,
yep.
And it's almost like evil stepped in right. and said, like, you know, I don't know what you're trying to do. I don't know why he has a bad British accent. I don't know why.
Sounds like Michael Caine. Is that Michael Caine, the devil, all of a sudden?
He has a bad British accent. I don't know what you're trying to do. But if you're going to, if you're going to make Catholicism trump over evil, I'm going to interrupt this podcast.
Seems to separate from the pack. Can I answer that? As they get older,
we're very similar. I think we've talked about this. For me, I was exhausted. Like, I even went to a Catholic college. I went to the University of Dayton, where they had, you know, come on out and let's go to church together. And I just was fucking beat, you know, volunteering and moving chairs at the convent and different things. Like, I don't think it ever affected my faith, but I was just very like, I'm just exhausted. I want to be able to sleep in on Sunday morning and not feel guilty about staying out, you know, till 3 a.m. on Saturday.
And I think the state of the Catholic Church, it's just very hard.
That's true, too.
It's just very hard to say, yeah, I stand up for any of these things. It's just very hard. I feel beaten down by it.
As a beaten down Catholic, do you still have faith?
In God. But, you know, I mean, I think any religion, I'm going to get in trouble for saying this. It's just the way human beings organize the information that they have. Exactly. I don't believe any religion is accurate at all. It's just, and because all human beings are flawed and, you know, the more people you get together to determine the rules of any one organization, the more power you give them, you have. So it's just the way, I think every religion is just the way that group of people feels most comfortable in sort of expressing their faith. But I don't think any religion is accurate.
All right, well, I'm gonna continue to go down this path for just a second because I'm going to go back.
Because you don't want anyone to buy my book.
No. I want people to buy the book. I want a full picture of what, you know. This isn't somebody that just randomly chose Catholicism and or chose, you know.
Oh, I know.
This is somebody that this comes from life experience.
It does, yeah.
So, but with the good being church, religion, good, there's evil in this book as well. Mm-hmm. So, if you still have, you said, I asked you if you still had your faith. You said you had your beliefs. What was the word you used exactly? If I asked you if you still have faith in all things religious.
Yeah, I wouldn't call myself religious anymore.
You wouldn't call yourself religious anymore. But you believe certain tenets that you still hold on to.
Sure.
Yeah, on some level. Uh-huh. So do you believe in evil?
Oh, well, sure. I mean, it's silly not to. But I think people are evil. Not all people, but I mean, I think that's
what evil is. Yeah. All people are evil. Here, I'll take some of the heat off of you. I'll bring it back on me. We are all evil. Everybody, there's evil everywhere. No, I believe. I truly
now,
believe.
Liar book.
Now, this has got nothing to do with whether people not buy the book, but it does make the author far more interesting to talk about when you say, what is she really about? That I'm not going to get in the blurb in the back.
I'm enthralled by it. I mean, and we've talked about this, the Conjuring movies, and what was the TV show on Netflix? Midnight Mass. There's just something innately spooky about Catholics.
Yeah. There's something spooky about religion.
Well, that's true.
There really is, and it doesn't even have to be a Christian religion. I mean, just organize the ritual. There really is. But I think one of the reasons that Catholicism, first of all, it's because The Exorcist was so insanely good and popular, for film, that just that's your go-to right there. But also, you know, I mean, the pageantry, right? Like the outfits and the big, you know, cathedrals
the gold pit,
yeah, and then of course that it, you know, it's, you know, it's the body and blood where, you know, other people, it's like symbolic. And a Catholic, no, they're saying it's not symbolic. They're saying there's a transformation here and you're drinking
actually
blood.
Drinking blood.
Yeah. So there's something, you know, it's easy, especially from an outsider who doesn't grow up with it. It's easy to find that very ghoulish. It's not hard to make that leap, I think.
No, it's not hard at all. But I do believe that there is evil.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. I mean, and not just from a religious standpoint. I just mean evil.
Sure. Oh, and just in full disclosure, this is kind of full circle. I mean,
I am evil.
I don't need to admit that. No, I send my kids to a Catholic school. Like, I mean, I still value the fact that I'm like,
there's certain things that are still ingrained in you.
Even though
you're
exhausted, need to the Bible,
tired, you weren't so tired where you're like, oh, I'm not that tired.
There's some good things
to
that.
School.
And I think in a way, you prove your point. Like, maybe you're not super religious, but you guys are great. You're a good person.
Yeah.
You're not robbing banks and, you know, murdering people that we know
of. No, it was, you know, it was
a good base for a child to grow from.
It was kind of tough. And I think it was harder for George. I was the one who was finally like, I'm not going to church anymore. And it's not because I want to sleep in that, although I do. It's because I cannot any longer align myself with what the Catholic Church does.
All right, we're back. Greg has rebooted the computer, and here we go. Back with Hope Madden and the book, Roost.
All right.
Well, you had a...
Well, yeah, so I haven't read it all.
You haven't gone far, but there's something that appealed to you and intrigued you.
Yeah, so, you know, you talk about, like, what... some of, you know, there is a percentage of this is 100% true, right? And
there's a percentage that's 100% true.
I like your math.
There's a song that you and your sisters and your dad sing.
Mm-hmm.
Sing it.
Do it. Yeah, I would actually probably have to look. I did make that up.
I made up the song.
I did. I can tell you what it's based on, though.
All right. Well, for the people, it's not that big of a spoiler because it's early in the book. But it's, these cute young twins, 7-year-old twins, are singing this little song, chickadee song. And then the dad calls them chickadee.
Yeah.
So, you know, like a nursery rhyme type of a thing.
Right.
So what's it based on then?
Well, and then I revisit it throughout because so many songs that you sing as a little kid actually are super creepy. They just, you know, they are. They're super creepy.
Ring around the rosy or whatever, right?
Yeah. And so that's why, but it's kind of based around the Tom Petty song, Honeybee, which is creepy as hell, honestly. And I remember, so that was what it was. I thought to myself, oh, I should pick up the creepy elements of that and turn it into a song little kids would sing. And then there are a lot of birds in it. So chickadee.
Actually,
my mom did call us chickadee a lot.
So there was a little bit there.
That was why that.
But you're also afraid of birds.
I am afraid of birds.
Why are you afraid of birds?
Just good thinking.
Were you attacked by birds?
Just good thinking. Maybe as I was trying to duck under my next door neighbor's porch, I was attacked by birds.
So can you watch out for Hitchcock?
That is a true story.
Can you watch out for Hitchcock the birds?
I watched that with my sister when I was too young to see it on TV, and that also scared me a great deal. I mean, I find that movie terrifying.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah. But I am afraid of birds. I'm definitely afraid of birds. And I think it just makes good sense because they flap around and they've got claws and they've got beaks and
birds are creepy.
Yeah, birds are creepy.
They're descendants of dinosaurs.
Dinosaurs, I'm afraid of them. I think it's all just good thinking.
What else? If there's a top three things that you're afraid of, what are they?
I am claustrophobic.
Really?
Yeah. Yes. I'm badly claustrophobic, which makes... So I'm not afraid of flying, per se, but being trapped inside a metal tube, I'm much too tall to be on an airplane. My knees always touch the seat in front of me. I feel... So I poor George. I do have a really hard time flying, but it's because I'm claustrophobic. And I have a pathological terror of the woods.
Right, you mentioned that.
And
all right, then top five then.
I think three is birds. I think those are my. And is rural anything? Anything rural? I don't think I'm afraid of the dark. I'm pretty comfortable in the dark.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're in theaters.
That's right.
You know, a good portion of your life watching movies.
It's clowns for you.
I hate clowns.
Yeah.
Hate clowns. I mean, literally. Yes, some do creep me out, and I'm sorry if that's how you make your living, but I almost beat the shit out of one in Folly Beach a few years back because he wouldn't. It was Halloween. It was Halloween, and he kept coming up to me, and he had one of those, you know, creepy, and I like step back, man. Step back. It's not gonna end well. And like, you know, he thought I was kidding. Like, I'm not fucking kidding. Clown is going down if you don't go the other way. Clowns. I'm not claustrophobic.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't go into an MRI tube. That probably
not at all. Not at all.
That would freak you out.
Yeah, that is a story. Yeah, that's a story.
You couldn't do that.
No, I will just have to die.
Really?
Yeah,
given the choice?
Yeah. Well, you know what? I literally cannot do it. I had to have one time, and I, you know, just be calm. Let's just be calm. And the thing is, as it starts to sort of move you back into it, involuntarily, I put my hands out and I drag myself back out and drop to the floor. I can't. It would be physically impossible for me to do it.
Wow. Huh. I don't know if I'm scared of the woods, but I think I would panic a little bit if I was lost in the woods.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe that's more of like alone. Yeah. I don't know. I've got an empty house tonight. Now that we're talking about this, I'm going to be up all night just thinking about this shit.
You know, I'm not claustrophobic, and I think the reasons I'm not are very sad and kind of spooky in their own right, you know, because I was actually, you told some truths. I'll tell some truth. You know, my father's former punishment when I was a kid was the lock me in the fruit cellar in the basement when we were
that's the beginning
up.
Of a horror story. Yes, right
is.
There
yeah man. Right and so and then to the point where I actually got comfortable in the
you were like I'll I got it dad I'm in down there
like oh fruit cellar got it okay yeah. fine you know but in the beginning no it was terrifying
yeah
but then after a while I got used to it and I find myself in actually comfortable in claustrophobic spaces
wow
yeah at times so it doesn't like. But the one thing I think would freak me the hell out, and I see it on TV and I see it in movies, I would, if I ever got buried alive, I think that would, that I think would like, okay, how am I going to get out of this?
Oh, yeah.
You know, I see that, and like that's got to be just horrifying.
Yeah, it's funny. Years ago, as a radio stunt, somebody did that at a radio station George worked at, and we would just lay awake at night and go, "He's still there. Oh my God, he's still in there." It was like I couldn't bear the thought of somebody else.
If I was buried alive for a radio prank, if I knew that eventually someone's gonna
maybe
bring me out, and that's fine. But to like you know. To be like, we're gonna bury you alive, and nobody's don't you know.
Let's talk about scary things. I don't know what exactly it's called, but people were scared back in the day of being buried alive.
Yeah.
So they had the bells
yeah,
right. wrapped around their toes, and like had these lines that would go up. So if they were like accidentally alive, they could ring the bells.
Yeah.
And there's some movie I forget what it is. Maybe the Nun. The Nun. Mm-hmm. They go out into the cemetery and all the bells are ringing. Yeah. Like that's, wow, I'm fucking scared already just thinking about it.
Are there any fears you've conquered?
Oh, I don't think so. I embrace them. I'm fine with it.
I'm scared of knives.
Well, okay.
I mean not, so that's not, just not, smart. Not like a butter knife or a steak knife or, you know, but when I hear that sound of a knife being come out and needles. Needles.
Practical things.
Yeah.
But needles, I've gotten better with needles, but you know, I still can't. I'm okay. I used to have an issue with just the needle going in and anything else, but now I have forced myself to watch.
Yeah, that's what I do.
Watch them draw the blood out and force myself to watch
sure.
the needle go in, you know. But I still say, I don't want to see how big it is.
Well, it kind of goes back, to like what Hope says, right? Like the very beginning of this podcast, like the more bullshit you are exposed to, the you know, the more you like, your imagination goes wild.
Right.
Like, oh, that could go wrong in so many different ways. Or what if, you know?
Yeah, I'd rather go up against a gun than a knife.
That's just dumb. That's just dumb.
That's like, don't bring a gun to a knife fight.
I know,
right?
Right, I know. I'd rather go up against a gun than a knife.
That's crazy.
I can explain that some other time. But I have my reasons.
Okay. All right.
And I have my explanations. I do. I really do. All things creepy tonight on this podcast, but all things really, really good. This is Roost, folks. Hope Madden's first book about two twin girls who are born on Easter Sunday and celebrate their birthdays, not every Easter Sunday, but as they come along periodically.
Is your birthday on Easter?
No,
your birthday?
No.
My birthday is right before Christmas.
Okay. Right before Christmas.
Yeah.
But which, as we know, that is the lesser of the two Catholic
holidays.
That's
right. It is the lesser of the two Catholic holidays. Yep.
Everybody's got a birthday, Dino.
But if you're looking for something interesting and creepy, and I had so many other questions, but they would have led to spoilers, and I really think that would be a disservice to not only this podcast, but to anybody that buys this book and reads it, let them,
it's fun.
Let them find out themselves.
Okay. Thank you.
How things go. And congratulations.
Thank you so much.
You know, at the end of the day, I mean, you sat down, you wrote a book, you published a book, you are a published author of a complete and full novel. And as those of us who write, bravo, well done.
Much.
Right?
Thank you
right,
very much.
Right? Bravo.
Thank
and,
you.
And much success with this one.
Thank
and
you.
Look forward to whatever the next one will be. I think how little and as much as I've known you through the years, I have a funny feeling that the next one will be just as even more diabolical in yet some way. And yet I look forward to it. I look forward. Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
And thank you so much for spending
thank
time with
so
us
today. Thank you so much for having me. I can't tell you how much I appreciate
it. I love
it.
You and George both, having you guys on the podcast with the movies, but to be able to spend some individual time with you on just this.
I don't think we've had just George on.
Oh, you have, actually.
We've had George on. Mm-hmm. Just with the movies.
Oh, there's an Oscar.
Just
with the movies. Well, there's an Oscar one.
Yep.
All right, George. All right. George is working on a book of dirty limericks.
Book of dirty limericks.
Can she do, are you wrapping up? Can she do the business, her business?
Yeah, of course I was going to ask her to do her business. Before we go. Yeah,
well,
because
last, there's a couple episodes ago, I asked the guest to do the business like three times because I just, I was just so saucy.
Go ahead, ask Hope to do the business. Go ahead
and do the business, Hope.
Tell people how they get the book.
How do they get the book, your podcast.
And everything else that's going on in your world, because you got a lot going on.
You do. You can get the book anywhere that you buy books. You can also, if you would like an autographed copy, you can get it from our website at madwolf, MADDWLF.com.
Do that.
You can also find gear there. Obstacle Corpse gear and all the sales of the book and the gear goes toward the production of our film that starts shooting in 2 weeks. So if you want to do that, that'd be awesome.
Cool.
Madwolf.com is also where you can find our movie reviews every week. You can also find our podcast Fright Club, which is about horror films there. You can find our podcast The Screening Room, which is each week's movie reviews there. And you can follow us on social at Madwolf on Twitter. Oh, right. And George usually does this. George always does this. So I'm stumbling. But we're on Good Day Columbus on Friday mornings at 9:30. So you can see us there.
The stuff you guys do at Gateway, is it once a month?
The second Wednesday of every month. So this tomorrow, actually, the second Wednesday of every month, we have a film series where we record the podcast Fright Club and we show, it's a list of like, in this week, it's the five best horror films of the 1930s.
Then
we're going to show the film Vampyr. So we show one of the movies that we talk about.
Fun.
That's cool.
And that's all into the website.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. One of the best times I ever had being a guest on a podcast was on their podcast.
Oh, yeah. We talked about
Bride of Frankenstein.
Bride of Frankenstein.
And I'm going to be geeky and have you sign my book.
Sure.
Because then it's going to go into, see that? Right there,
that's the autograph.
Those are all first editions.
Aww.
Or
this is a first edition.
First editions or signed copies of favorite books and authors. There's a small fortune right there. There's Harper Lee's in there.
You going out of town this weekend?
Capote's in there.
Wow, I shouldn't be on that job.
Give me an address and your work schedule.
I'm throwing a Hope Madden in there and keeping a good thought. Yeah, come on. I would love to have more writers on Whiskey Business. It's a great book, great cover, and a great podcast with a very talented author.
Thank you.
Who does so many other things as well.
Thank you so much.
Good luck with everything. Thank you so much. Our guest bottle tonight has been the Jim B. Rye Pre-Prohibition style whiskey, which was quite the coup tonight because Hope and George don't drink a lot of whiskey.
No.
And Hope actually liked this.
I did.
I didn't love it at first, but it went down pretty quick.
Yeah, normally after two or three, they do.
No matter what.
So,
let me do the business before you close.
Oh, you got more business to do?
I want to remind you, I've been listening to a lot more podcasts because I've been in the car, and everybody does this, and we've done it before, too. We ask you to rate and review and share. Oh, so yes. I don't feel as like pandering because every podcast I ever listen to says
it. All the fundamental podcast things that everybody does, we don't do enough of.
No, but like, so if you go down in your Apple thing really or whatever, good. And you give us a big 5-star review and a great rating, even if it's not that great of a review, you know, just something. But anyway, the algorithms make more people discover us. And then also just word of mouth, you know, what's so fun of us, we always joke about it's the podcast with whiskey because we really have a lot of people. So you might have a horror book fan tonight that you know.
for something different to read. From a new talent,
or just some of the record or the records, the podcasts in the past that you like, share them. Thank you, and that's all. Thank you for whoring us out for us.
Whoring out this evening. All right. Until
Hope's not used to this nonsense.
The next bottle. See ya.
History is complicated. The story of human progress is long, messy, and riddled with controversies big and small. On Conflicted, we dive headfirst into history's most infamous events and contentious figures. We try and untangle the good from the bad, the fact from the fiction, and the monsters from the misunderstood. Was Genghis Khan a murderous butcher or a civic pioneer? Did the Allied powers go too far in firebombing the German city of Dresden at the twilight of World War II? And how did the Marquis de Sade acquire such a sinister reputation? And was any of it true? These are just a few of the tough questions we wrestle with and investigate on Conflicted. So if you love history or just enjoy a good story, please join me, your host, Zach Cornwell, for a fascinating new topic each and every month. Conflicted, a history podcast, is available on Spotify, Apple, or wherever else you get your podcasts. I hope to see you soon.